The date is October 14th, 1994, and we're watching Little Giants. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Kevin O'Shea to my Danny O'Shea.
I wish I had some gum to chew. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So this week, we are doing a listener request from a fabulous listener, Rebecca H., who has actually made requests before. She requested Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Breakfast Club. It's that easy. If you want to hear us talking about a movie you love, just slide on into our DMs like Rebecca. So this week, we are looking back at October 1994, when the movies and theaters were The Specialist, The Scout, The River Wild, and A Troll in Central Park. And, of course, our movie for today, Little Giants, which earned $19.6 million on a $20 million budget. Man, so close.
So close. Who had to pay for that extra $0.7 million?
Yeah, you're just a whisker away. Just a whisker away.
But, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So, this week, we have two taglines that appear on the poster for this movie. The first is, "The comic telling of a gridiron miracle!" Exclamation point! So that one's exciting. The comic telling of a gridiron miracle! With excitement.
That seems like it should be reserved for a story that's actually true.
True. Number two, "For everyone who's waited to be chosen and wasn't, your day has come."
I like that one. That one's good.
That's heartwarming. But it may not be the best description of the movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
Okay. When they were boys, Danny O'Shea lived in the shadow of his older brother Kevin. 30 years later, not much has changed. Having returned to his hometown of Urbana as a local football hero, Kevin takes over as head coach of the Pee Wee football team and sets his sights on winning a state championship. Kevin's niece and Danny's daughter Becky, aka Icebox, is one of the hopefuls to make the team, but despite being one of the best players on the field, she's cut by her uncle, who believes that she should spend her time being more ladylike. After being ridiculed by some of the successful players, Becky decides to create her own team with all the players who got cut and ropes her dad into being the coach. Seeing an opportunity to stand up to his brother and make his daughter happy, Danny steps up to the challenge. With two football teams in town but only one spot in the Pop Warner League, Danny challenges Kevin to a game to see who will represent Urbana. With little skill but big hearts, Danny, with some timely help from John Madden and a group of NFL stars, molds this group of undersized misfits into little giants. On the day of the big game, Kevin ups the stakes by putting up his car dealership and Danny's gas station in a winner-takes-all battle for football supremacy and fraternal respect. That is your 60-second synopsis.
Right on. So this is a movie that, like I said, was requested by Rebecca H. It's actually been a while since she requested it, and I couldn't remember exactly what she had requested. I remembered it as like Heavyweights or The Sandlot. So when I saw that it was Little Giants, I realized that I had never seen this movie. And then I went to find a copy and couldn't find it on streaming. But as it's been mentioned on the show before, I have a pretty obscenely large DVD collection. And I figured, what the hell? Why don't I double check? And what do you know? I own this fucking movie. But I've never seen it. I realized that as soon as I hit play on this movie, I have never seen this movie. I mean, you know, you have too many DVDs when.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even know when I would have bought it or why I would have bought it. The only thing I can think of is that at one point, I inherited several dozen DVDs from someone that had decided that they were going completely digital. Why have all these around? They're just taking up space. And I'm like, oh, I'll take them. So that might be where this came from, is maybe they were hers. And because, yeah, I've really never seen this movie. So this was exciting for me, though, when I looked at that message from Rebecca, and I'm like, oh, Little Giants. Okay, this is going to be fun. What about you, Colin? Did you have any experience with Little Giants before now?
No, not at all. I kind of thought that I had seen it, but I must have seen some other movie with kids playing football that was not
Bad
this
News
one,
Bears. Maybe.
Maybe. I yeah.
Like yeah. Or, as soon or as it Bad started, News I kind of baseball. Or there's a baseball and a football. I think.
I'm trying to. Is the Sandlot football?
No, Sandlot is baseball.
Is Sandball's baseball?
Hmm. Yeah. Heavyweights. What's Heavyweights?
Heavyweights is a fat camp.
Oh, okay.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah, see, I've never seen Heavyweights, so. But we've discussed that off mic, that we might be slipping that in at some point soon. So. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I've never seen Little Giants before, but yeah.
So this is exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, I was happy to have watched it.
Right on. Well, let's jump into Little Giants, directed by Duane Dunham. It's spelled Duwayne. I've never seen Dwayne spelt like that.
Yeah, me neither. That's a...
Dwayne. He's the director of Halloween Town and Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey, so...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there
great,
you go.
Great, great, great credits.
Yeah. Produced by Arnie Schmidt and written by James Ferguson, Robert Shallcross, Tommy Swerdlow, and Michael Goldberg. I know I've seen Tommy Swerdlow's name in other movies that we've done. I just forgot to, like, look up where we actually know him. But I recognized his picture. It's kind of funny, the amount of research that I do on this show, that eventually I just start recognizing people where I'm like, oh, where I would have never thought of this person ever before in my life, you know? Yeah. Like, producers and writers. It's like, why do I know this face? Oh, yeah, he was the writer of this, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I guess I assume that directors are kind of like, they do a lot of movies in Hollywood, but I'm surprised at how many directors from the 80s and 90s are kind of like, they had like one big movie and the rest are all really obscure,
or they're television.
Or they're almost like TV directors, where it's just like I feel like now being a director in Hollywood is like a big deal. It's like, who's acting and then who's directing, but it seems like in the 80s and 90s, it was more about who's starring in it and less about who was directing it, unless it was like Scorsese or something like that.
Well, and it's funny because nowadays it's almost like it's going the other way. You have someone like Paul Feig, who, you know, was a director on The Office, and then now he's like, you know, Bridesmaids guy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So, you know, you've got those, or the music video directors like David Fincher, you know. he directs George Michael's video with Supermodels, and then all of a sudden he's the Seven guy and he's the Fight Club guy.
Yeah.
So we open this movie with fun animated football play credits. I really liked just the tone that was set right from the beginning. Because even though I have never seen this movie, I knew I was in for a underdog sports kids movie, and I knew exactly what the movie was going to be. I even had predictions in my notes as I'm going along with things that were going to happen. But yeah, we see the water tower. You said Urbania. Was it pronounced like that in the movie? Like, I've just been saying it like Urbania. Like, it's Urbania, oh, brother. You know? Like, yeah.
I feel like I remember them hearing say Urbania, but maybe I just made that up.
Get on down to Urbania 30, where you have Macho Man Randy Savage going up against the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, yeah, it's the O'Shea brothers. Kevin O'Shea versus Danny O'Shea for the Urbania World Classic.
It's Urbania, brother! But, you know, I was interested. I'm like, that's a weird name for a town. Is that a real place? And for some reason, when I Googled it, it came up as Urbana, Ohio.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was the closest. Like, it's, did you mean Urbana? I guess I did, Google, because you don't seem to know the name Urbania. So I don't know what's up with that.
Maybe it's one of those things where they tried to make a fake town, but they were like, let's keep something close. So it's like, we're not going to get sued, but people will know what we're about.
Yeah, we're not going to be the Goonies in Astoria.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there watching the credits, and all of a sudden I'm like, wait, Mary Ellen Trainor's in this movie? I'm like, yes! Like, she's like our like underdog on this show. This is now her fourth appearance. Mary Ellen Trainor, the mom from the Goonies.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was blanking. nondescript white female.
Yeah.
I was watching the first bit of this movie with my wife. And in that opening scene when it has the two kids,
yeah,
I was like, those kids are either their
actual
like
kids.
Actual offspring, or they found two kids who look remarkably like those actors, because it's crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty uncanny. Like the second I saw the kid with glasses, I'm like, well, there's Rick Moranis as a kid.
Yeah,
but I like though how for the girl, they have to make sure that they give her like this nervous tick of playing with her necklace, which is very obvious because when she's grown up later on, you're going to see that as a grown up, she does the exact same thing, goes for the necklace and starts playing with it as soon as she sees Danny.
Yeah. That's a good eye. I never caught that.
Oh, okay. I read that Gary Busey and Randy Quaid were originally cast as the leads for this movie, though. It didn't specify who it was, but I assume Randy Quaid is the Rick Moranis character, probably.
Gary Busey is like
Mr. Joshua from Lethal Weapon, the crazy guy from Life. You know,
that's kind of interesting because I feel like. Am I thinking of? I think I'm thinking of Dennis Quaid.
Oh yeah.
Randy Quaid would have for sure been the,
yeah,
Rick Moranis. I think.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Dennis Quaid, and I was like, he looks too cool to be.
Oh yeah.
To be that character.
No. We're talking Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation. Yeah. So yeah, we open the movie in like Urbania, 1964, and yeah, we meet them as kids, and then. And then we find out that Danny doesn't get picked, and we get a whole bunch of like exposition in the opening here really quickly that he's just going to sit out. That's what Danny does. But I like the transition with the football where they kick the football and we've got 30 years later and we're in present day Urbania.
The home of superstar Kevin O'Shea with his name on the water tower and all the signs. I like that he's like a Heisman Trophy winner. I don't remember if they said he's a Super Bowl trophy championship winner or not.
Well, I didn't think to write it down because yeah, they go through his list of accolades. I like how like the girl, how Icebox is sitting there. I want to know how she got that nickname. Was it ever explained? I don't remember.
No.
But
I don't think they ever explained it.
Yeah, I love how though she's rattling off his accolades before he gets to that part in his speech. How many towns do you think build giant bronze Heisman replica trophies in the town of their hometown hero, you know?
I don't know. I mean, Edmonton has one of Wayne Gretzky. He's not our hometown hero, but like,
that's true.
I feel like it's a similar type of situation. People love to make, you know, they have statues of Jordan in Chicago. They have statues of, pretty sure there's a Bobby Orr statue in Boston.
You actually have to think about the fact that we do have a Rick Moranis statue in Edmonton.
We have our Bob and Doug McKenzie statues.
Yeah. But okay. So was that bronze statue? Was that him? Or was that a Heisman Trophy statue? Or was it just him in a Heisman position? Or, like, a pose, I mean.
I thought it was him in a Heisman pose.
Okay. See, I mean, he's wearing a helmet, so you can't tell anyway.
Yeah. I kind of wish there was a little bit more explanation of what Kevin's story is. Yeah. Because it's been 30 years.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he seems, I'm going to guess he's, well, I mean, Tom Brady retired and unretired at, like, age 42.
Yeah.
I would guess that Kevin is early to mid-40s. But I was trying to, like, assess, like, is he just fresh from finishing his pro football career and now he's come back home? Or, like, I guess my point is just Ed O'Neill seems older than that. Like, he seems like there would have been a gap between the two, and I was just kind of, like, wondering what he was doing between that time.
I know for sure. I really appreciated the fact that I was looking at Ed O'Neill that was roughly the age that he was in Married with Children, because mm-hmm. I was a big Modern Family watcher, and yeah. So I'm more accustomed with old Ed O'Neill at this point.
Same.
That it was fun seeing him at Al Bundy age, but he was very, yeah. very not Al Bundy in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I really liked the character of Kevin quite a bit, because he wasn't just a one-dimensional villain. Like, I look at Rick Moranis as Danny, and he's always just Rick Moranis. I mean, there's some tweaks that Rick Moranis does, but you really only see major characters from Rick Moranis with something like SCTV, where he's doing Bob and Doug McKenzie. But I was looking at Ed O'Neill, and I'm like, I'm impressed with how much not like Al Bundy you are right now. But the character himself, I mean, he gets redeemed at one point. Or, like, he's not all evil. Like, he still has heart. He's not the one-dimensional...
Yeah.
Villain opposing coach that you get with something like Mighty Ducks, where, you know.
Yeah, like, the thing about Kevin is Kevin actually never really does anything, like, quote unquote, wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of crappy that he doesn't pick Icebox for the team, but, you know, he's at the end of the day, he's not a bad guy. And even, like, the story of, The only bad thing he really does, I would say, is, like, that beginning scene where he's not nice to his brother.
Yeah.
Like, he could have just thrown his brother a bone and picked him for the game, right? That's kind of, like, the one thing. But overall, throughout the movie, I think his story is basically, like, he assembles a team to win a state championship. His brother decides to make another team. So then he has to coach his team to beat his brother's team so that they can be in the league.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily make him a bad guy.
No. The compromise they end up coming to, I mean, it does make more sense in the long run of, it's like, well, why can't we just be one team?
Yeah.
See, I was thinking, well, good on you when it came to him cutting Icebox, where it's like, you're not showing nepotism, at least.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'm guessing the undertone, though, is that this is a sexist play, though. That's what I'm guessing it has to be. No one wants to play with the girl.
Yeah. I thought Kevin, when I started watching the movie, was going to be more, and not stupid like Ricky Bobby, but more Ricky Bobby-esque in that it's like, win at all costs, like winning is everything and that kind of stuff. And like, he likes to win. But he's not really that, like, you can tell he still likes to win with integrity.
Yeah. Yeah, because you have, like, the military dad coach, and he's like, whoa, no, do that again, and you're out of here. Like, yeah. You know, you do get that at the one point. The other kids that he doesn't pick for the team at the beginning, you can kind of see why with them.
Yeah. I mean,
the one kid that always chokes, and the one fat kid, of course. I mean, we have to have a fat kid in one of these movies. Gotta.
Of course.
Gotta.
Who farts all the time. Stores food in his helmet.
Yeah, those farts stink, man. Yeah, I do like the jelly sandwich psycho. That was something that I enjoyed, was him getting hit on the top of the head and he has the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but you think he's bleeding.
Yeah.
So, of course, with a movie like this, if we don't get picked for a team, what do? Well, we start our own team, Colin.
Yeah. I mean, before that, I like I like that all these guys, like all the, you know, the losers, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Like they all seem to be friends, and then like they have their little Goonies style clubhouse with pirate flags and all that. I thought was a nice touch. I didn't really understand. Does Danny's, like, is the go-kart their primary means of transportation? Like, why does the Icebox just come ripping around like Mad Max on this go-kart?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a scene I didn't get. Or why he does at one point, even.
Yeah.
But, I mean, no, he does have his pickup truck. He has his truck for the Shell station that he has.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know what? Like I said, that is a Shell station. And I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. Why not? It was right there. Why not take the shot?
You might not get any more opportunities until we talk about the Cowboys jerseys.
Well, this one really messed with my head, I admit. Because, like, at first I thought, okay, like, it's going to have every single possible sports item, just like any of these movies that we've done. But then there was a scene in Danny's kitchen, like, early in the movie, where all the labels seem very deliberately turned away in the shot. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be one of these ones. But then we got to the scene with Devon Sawa chucking toilet paper spirals, and that all changed. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Little Giants is brought to you by Wilson, Rydell, Champion, CCM, Adidas, Apex, and Reebok Sports Equipment, Super Nintendo, Pennzoil, King Engine Bearings, Delco, BF Goodrich, Walker Advantage Muffler, Snap-on Racing, Ray-Ban Sunglasses, Albers Feeds, Cheetos, Betty Crocker, Little Debbie, Frito-Lay, Nabisco and Christie Cookies, McDonald's, Gatorade and Coca-Cola, Ford and Chevrolet and the NFL, plus a special shout-out to the fictional Firm Grip Adhesive, Danny Shell Service, Zoltek's House of Sausage, quote, our worst is the best. I love a good pun.
Doesn't that the thing I thought was the funniest about that sausage thing, I don't know if this is an intentional joke, but it comes right after the scene where Kevin is teaching them how to tackle in his house, and he goes through the window and sacks himself on the log. Like, I was wondering if there was some sort of, like, if that's like a double dick joke situation.
Oh. I don't know. And finally, O'Shea Chevrolet, you'll thank me tomorrow. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, I don't know. I love a good pun. Our worst is our best. So, yeah, so they decide to start up their own team. I like the scenes in the diner with the old men stirring shit up.
Yeah.
Where, you know, at the root of it is the, you know, these men that are kind of like, well, you guys could play a game, and, you know, they're the ones taking the odds down and everything like that. But I really like the bit where his daughter comes in and sees Danny sitting at the bar, and then sees Uncle Kev walk over, and she's like, well, so I started a team, love you, bye. And she takes off, and then, like, the hijinks just ensues when Kevin talks to Danny. And but it's these old men that have just stirred all this up, though, ultimately.
Okay, maybe you can clarify for this, because I missed this on both watches, but, like, there's a scene where Kevin is talking to, like, I'm assuming the head of the Pee Wee organization about the Pop Warner League, and he's the one who tells Kevin, like, oh, I just got a call, and apparently there's two teams in Urbana. And then Kevin sees Danny at the bar, but at this point Danny doesn't know that there's a second, like, Danny doesn't know yet. And yeah. and then Becky comes and she's like at the window, like, and then basically like convinces him to take it on that he's going to be the coach. But I was like, who called this guy to tell him that there was already another team? I missed that aspect of it.
That I'm not sure of, because the only people that have talked about there being another team at this point are the kids.
Yeah, maybe it was like that one kid went back to his dad or something, and then
maybe one of them's a grandfather.
But it seems official, because it seems like they both, and I mean, it's like, maybe it's
did
like
they go down to town hall and file some forms.
It's like Michael Scott style, where you just have to declare it into the universe.
I declare bankruptcy. Yeah,
I have a football team. Let it be so.
It's a binding verbal agreement to the universe, is what it is.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like. But yeah, those old guys are kind of interesting. I wish that's another aspect I think I would have liked them to delve more into. I couldn't tell if they were whose side they were on.
Yeah.
Or if they were on anybody's side.
Well, and unfortunately they disappear in the movie.
Yeah.
Because I mean, this movie is basically three main acts. So there's the recruiting the football team act, there's the training the football team act, and then there's the game. Is the third act, right? And the old men, I don't remember seeing them at the game at the end. But they're stirring shit up throughout the movie, because like they're the ones that have the tip of the giant kid that's moved into town when everyone's trying to recruit, what's-his-face? Spike.
Spike doesn't play with girls.
Spike talks in the third person, and it gets kind of old fast.
I guess, so we're at the recruit. We've created the team. Now they're recruiting the team.
We're recruiting the team. Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, each act is also capped off with montages. So yeah, we start off with our recruiting the team montage. Basically,
it's very where does this movie fall relative to the Mighty Ducks? Because I found this movie, it was hard for me to not draw comparisons.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, this is 94. Mighty Ducks was 91, wasn't it?
I can't remember. I want to say 93, but 92. Okay.
But, I mean, so many of these movies are like this, though. I mean, you go back and they're all just a take on Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
I guess to me it was like, the thing I kind of noticed was, like, after Danny assembles the team and he brings them this, like, bag full of mismatched helmets and, like, wrong sporting equipment. And it just reminded me of, like, in the Mighty Ducks, how when Bombay first shows up to the District 5 team, you know, like, Charlie's wearing a football helmet. Some of them are wearing
Goldberg is wearing magazines and, like, on his shins.
Yeah, they're wearing, like, rollerblading equipment and all that stuff. And so just those, like, small, like, similar comparisons.
I definitely like the Darth Vader helmet. That was that was my favorite gag piece of sporting equipment.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like the montage of them gaining their team, though, because you find out really quick who each character is, and they just get on with it.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have long introductions to these kids. Like, one of my favorites is the kid sitting on the horse.
Yeah.
You know, do you play football? No. Do you like football? No. Do you want to play football? No. Come on. And then all of a sudden, he's walking along the railroad tracks with every other kid.
Yeah.
Why? You know, only in the 90s is kids walking along a railroad track a good idea to put in there.
Yeah, and Joe Dirt. But I digress. I like the strategy of also hiring a chess player as your strategist.
Yeah.
Because we all know that football is just, it's just chess with real people.
That's right.
Football is like as close as you can get to Wizards chess. Maybe in real life.
Well, okay, so the one scene I don't understand, though, is, like, during this recruitment of everything, you know, most of the team is now gathered, and they're gathered in some, like, warehouse somewhere, or was that?
I thought it was, like, the back, like, garage of his gas station.
Oh, maybe. But we've got this weird scene where the bullies come in and, like, you know, Wedgie, the one kid, and, you know, like, the bullies from the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, Icebox just comes tearing in on this fucking go-kart. What was that all about? It's like, I have no idea what's going on at this point when we get this whole chase scene of the bikes and the go-kart just tearing around the back. Like,
isn't that before? That's when they're at their, that's their clubhouse there.
Oh, okay.
Because then she like, yeah, oh, she that comes ripping in and chases them on the bikes, then it ends with, like, she dumps that one guy in the river and is like, well, we're gonna make our own football team.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, sorry, that. Sorry, yeah, my mistake, yes, that was right, but it still, I just don't understand what was going on with that go-kart. Yeah, I guess I went back for a second, but yeah.
It's one of the, I think it's only to look cool. Like, it's one of those things, yeah. It's completely, just because if I had watched this movie in 1992 when I would have been 6 years old, I guess, I would have thought, man, I wish I had a go-kart. That looks so awesome. Yeah.
It's so much better than a Power Wheels.
Yeah.
So with the kids that they end up picking up, that chess-playing kid looked so much like Rick Moranis as well.
Yeah.
Like, you said they did good casting in the beginning. This kid almost looks more like Rick Moranis than
that kid in the beginning. I think even that really tiny kid looks like Rick Moranis.
Right? Like, yeah, I got that same vibe. The snot kid?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To go back, I forgot about this moment. In the very first scene, after, like, when they're recruiting, I almost barfed when that one kid, like, blows a snot rocket on that other kid. It's so nasty. But I forgot, yeah, people used to do that. Ugh.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
assault now.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's funny because they got to the point where, like, we see the kid with the abandoning father.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit, is that Anakin Skywalker? Like, did you not get, like, major Jake Lloyd vibes from that kid?
Oh, I didn't know.
It wasn't, but I at first totally thought it was Jake Lloyd.
Huh.
But then I look up Jake Lloyd's IMDb, and it's like he's got, like, no IMDb, basically. Star Wars, yeah, killed any chance at a career for him. Everything he has on his IMDb is, like, his voice was used in future Star Wars video games.
Yeah.
So he gets, but it's probably just sound bites from the movie.
Yeah.
But no, this kid, I remember him from a show. Oh, fuck. What was it called? Oh, he was the kid on Grace Under Fire.
I never saw that show.
That was a show I used to watch. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the kid abandoning, or the father abandoning his kid, or I guess he wasn't abandoning. He just he always has to work. He's never there for his kid. I don't, yeah, know. I mean, I don't know whether I really felt that story. I mean, I get more feelings from the song Cats in the Cradle than I did with this whole storyline. For it to end up in such a cheerful, you know, moment at the end of the movie for this to resolve, you know? Like, it's...
I mean, I liked the moment at the end with that. But two things. I thought it very strange that it seems like, I want to know who the actor is who plays his dad, because I feel like he doesn't speak a line, but his last scene is literally just, we're supposed to make the mental leap that he seemingly just ran. Like, did he decide not to go to work? Because, yeah, he leaves the morning of the game. Like, did he think better of it and show up at the game? Or was it like something got canceled? Or, yeah, whatever. That kind of matters in my mind for whether how nice it is. But then he just runs around the entire field and onto the end zone. Like,
yeah,
who,
yeah,
did Danny at some point, like, stop him and be like, hey, we need to score. I need you to run to the other side and, like, meet your son? Or I don't know. It was very strange to me. It was kind of, I will admit it, it warmed my heart a little bit, but it was short-lived because then I was just kind of, I felt myself struggling with the logistics of it.
Now, when anytime we see the dad leave, isn't he getting into his own car or is he getting into a taxi?
I don't remember. Okay. I want to say taxi, but
yeah, because see, I mean, in that scene that you're talking about at the end, like, I'm pretty sure he's also jogging across the field with his briefcase.
Yeah, he has his briefcase. Yeah,
yeah. So it's like, why didn't you leave that in the car? But if he was taking a taxi, then
yeah,
I guess that makes sense. Or we wouldn't know who he was if he didn't have his briefcase in his hand.
Yeah,
because he doesn't say a line.
What were your thoughts on the love story between Becky and Junior? If you had even call it that, I thought that was a very strange relationship.
Yeah. She was obviously just feeling things that she had never felt before, but both of them to me, like, some of those kids seemed really young, but both of those two to me seemed much older than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Or everyone else.
Yeah.
That it just felt very much to me like, why are you guys this weird about kissing and stuff? You know, like when they do actually end up having the talk, you know, when they're watching the people on in the rowboat and they're like, ew, they're like using like tongues. Oh, well, my sister says that she uses her tongue. And it's just like, really? I don't ever remember sitting around and having those conversations when I was younger.
Yeah. I mean...
Or was I running in the wrong circles? I mean...
I feel like I just wasn't in those circles, probably. But yeah. With their relationship, I could never tell. It seems like Junior does like her. But in that thing with the kissing, she mentions, like, oh, you'd rather... Basically saying, like, oh, you'd rather make out with the like skinny blonde like girly girl, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he never really refutes that.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, don't you think it would have been a better? And maybe I'm just looking at it with like today's eyes, and I think it's like a nicer story and a more like meaningful or like inclusive, maybe is the better word. But it's like, you know, it just would have been nice to be like, no, I do like you for who you are, I guess, and like I would, but it's like they never really bridge that gap. Mm-hmm. And then is it like only so that it's not doubly awkward by the fact that her dad ends up dating his mom, which is also just kind of a shoehorned relationship?
Yeah, and like what happens if both couples end up dating? That's a weird situation at that point.
Yeah. It was weird.
So I did write something down when he pulls out all the equipment. I did like the jockstrap moment.
Mm-hmm.
That was disgusting and hilarious for me. And I also love the line, be careful, some of those are antiques.
Yeah.
But that digital snot is the worst. Like that was such a fake snot.
Yeah.
But yeah, mm-hmm. So we start getting our montages of them getting better or whatever, training where they can't get across the monkey bars and everything looks like it's going to be hopeless. But we come across some kid in a grocery store hucking rolls of toilet paper. Back in the 90s, was toilet paper sold in individual rolls like that at a supermarket? Nah. Or is this a small town thing?
I was going to say, the only place I've ever seen toilet paper sold in individual rolls was at a gas station.
Yeah. But that was a big pyramid of toilet paper that they had going on.
Yeah.
But I like how toilet paper becomes Hot Hands' special trick. Hot Hands can catch toilet paper, but he can't catch a football.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The thing about toilet paper is it's like, I do think it would be easier to grab. Like, a football is going to have, like, the bounce. Toilet paper is absorbent, especially depending on what type of toilet paper you get. If it's, like, 3-ply, you know, it might be softer and just, like, rest in your hands a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But I don't understand, like, why, or did they maybe? I don't remember. If they, at some point, they should have transitioned him from toilet paper to football prior to the big game.
Yeah.
To prove that he could catch a football.
Yeah. Well, they started, I thought. Like, it was just...
But then why... But if he can't catch, why at the game does he still need to use that? Or is it just, maybe it's just at that point, it's just nerves.
Yeah, he still hasn't caught anything up to that point, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, I mean, thankfully, because we meet this kid, we end up meeting the girl from the beginning, the love interest that plays with her necklace. And we end up with that little love story happening in this movie. Why have these people not seen each other for this long? Like, it feels like they haven't seen each other since they're kids. I just looked up the population of Urbana, Ohio. And today it is like 11,000 people.
Yeah. I would say that this Urbana seems like, I get small town vibes from this place. There's no way that these people haven't run into each other since they graduated.
Yeah. Because it also seems like they must live close, too. Because whatever this grocery store is where they found this kid, it's kid distance away from their homes. It's a biking distance away from their homes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, on the adult relationship side of it, Danny was married for seemingly quite a while. So yeah. It might have just been that, like, you know, maybe they did see each other around, but, like, they just weren't, like, close or whatever and that type of thing, so maybe they just didn't talk, sort of thing.
Now, did I miss something near the beginning of the movie that explained the mom, or is it like really like towards the end there that's the first we really hear of his mom, when Icebox starts going through her, you know, little crisis of wanting to be pretty?
No, there's an explanation at the beginning. Like, it's the scene right after she doesn't get picked for the football team and Danny's telling her, like, he says something, it's like, you know, you not getting picked up for the team is kind of like, he equates it somehow to her mother leaving them, like it's an opportunity for something else.
Okay.
Like, it's just a new, it's like, he frames it as, in, it's like, you know, when something bad happens to you, it's just a new opportunity for something good to happen type thing.
So did she leave or die?
She left. Because at one point he says she picked another team.
Okay, like, see, I thought that was goes to heaven. I thought that's what he meant by, see, I don't know, like, I was just getting vibes of this kid has no contact with her mom at all, so I didn't realize it was an abandoning situation. I thought it was she left us.
Yeah. I mean, the vibe I got was that her mother just peaced.
Okay.
And just, like, decided she didn't want to be a part of their family anymore.
So she went to for another team. So it's like, I'm a lesbian now? Is that what they mean by other team? Picked another team?
Given that it's the 90s, I don't think they went that way.
So as they're getting better, you know, and we start getting the montage where everyone's able to make it across the monkey bars, at one point we get a scene where Kevin is trying to beef up his team. And he's doing the practicing in the living room. Why isn't he even out in his...
on the second floor.
Yeah.
On the second floor, I'll add.
Like, why isn't he even out in the backyard? This was one scene where I'm like, why are they doing this inside? And then my like, family movie 90s sports genre, you know, radar kicked in, where I'm like, okay... if this was something like the Mighty Ducks or something like that, they're going to do that so that someone can run into a wall or break something. And sure enough, like 5 seconds after thinking that, he's out the window and he's landing nuts first. That's a ruptured testicle. Holy shit. Nuts first on that big branch. Oh, boy. The logic of being inside.
I have to question what his plan was even... like, was he going to fully just blast his wife? Like, I don't know.
that's what it seemed like. Yeah.
Like, I'm concerned for their relationship, if so, because that seems abusive.
And that's where I say that if this was a character that was, like, just a one-note character where he was just this bully asshole, it's kind of like, okay, I could maybe get behind that idea. But he's a nice guy, too. He's a loving husband. He's... you know, a savvy businessman, you know, so he's not just the jock bully asshole.
Yeah.
And then we get Danny doing the party for the kids. That was a nice little moment. See, and that one, I understand why they were doing it inside, because he had, like, a karaoke machine set up and everything like that.
Also,
but the introduction of everyone, yeah.
I actually, one of the things I really love in this movie is the parents. Like, even outside of Kevin and Danny, like, I like the two dads that act as the goalposts.
Yeah.
For the little kid who's the kicker.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when all the kids are having their different moments of scoring touchdowns and stuff, they did such a good job of having, like, the reactions look so pure and heartfelt, and they look so proud.
That's true.
That was probably the most heartwarming point of the movie for me. I was like, man, especially when you have the one crazy mom or whatever, when that little guy's like, don't go talk about my mama and all that. But still, it's just, I thought they did a really good job in this movie of showing quality family relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
Even outside of the main characters.
Well, see, and even going way back to, like, when, you know, little snot bubble kid was introduced to the group. I mean, that was the mom dropping him off. And her whole speech, like, she was such a fun character. You know, her whole speech about how we figured that football would be just the cure that he needs and everything like that. Like, it just, yeah, great side characters. You're absolutely right. I like the little, like, espionage thing that they've got going on, though, where Kevin is trying to get all the intel on what the other team is doing. And they get the idea to call the cops.
Yeah.
That was absolutely amazing. Where it's just like, there's these two guys with binoculars watching little kids, and then the other kid, and the kid is going, you know, like, I'm scared. Like, absolutely brilliant.
I like that too.
Yeah,
there's that scene, and then there's the scene at the car wash when I think his name is Butts shows up.
Yeah,
and I like how I just like Danny's kind of savviness. Like I like Danny's. I like those scenes where Danny, like, gets a one up on his brother and his cronies, but I thought that the car wash scene as well was funny when he turns them all loose on him.
Yeah.
It's a free wash.
Just, well, see, and that's another thing that I really appreciate about this movie compared to some of the other sports movies is that there isn't this mysterious rich benefactor that has come in to save the day. You know, like, when he gets the uniforms at the end for the team, it's not this big reveal. It's like, oh, red shirts, thanks. You know, like, I appreciate the fact that they're out there hustling. They're, you know, they've got their side hustle of this car wash to try to pay for their uniforms. They're trying to get things happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We have to talk about Spike.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, it's at that point after the car wash that the old men start stirring shit up, and we get our mad race to go meet Spike, where it's go-kart versus Corvette. I don't understand how that was even a competition, but that takes balls to hop in front of that train in your go-kart, I gotta say.
Yeah. This is kind of one of the things where Kevin as a character, I think, he's not one-dimensional, but, like, his decision-making is pretty stable the whole way through.
Mm-hmm.
I actually felt that it was a weird decision for Danny to take Spike.
Yeah.
Just based on how Spike presented to him and all that. Like, I would have thought Danny... I had expected Danny to go there, and then once we meet Spike and see how he is, I expected that Danny was kind of just going to be like, you know what? We're good. We're good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, there is the aspect of, it's like, well, you don't want him playing against you.
Yeah.
So you might as well have him on your side, at least. You know, this also goes back to what you were saying about, like, the parents having such a good role in this movie. That's something you don't see in a lot of these sports comedies, is, like, really good parent support.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, even this, like, military dad trying to get Spike into football, it's like, you don't usually see them trying to get people into the game. It's more, we're going to go do our thing on our own, and the parents don't seem to be as involved in other movies, but it was nice to see that in this. But, yeah, I mean, Spike, you meet him, and he's, like I said, he's talking in the third person. Mentioned that earlier. I mean, I kind of hated that. I, like, Spike, right off the bat, was a character that I'm like, no, this is not like Fuller in Mighty Ducks. Like this yeah. is a kid that no, ultimately you're not going to want him on your team because this kid is an asshole.
Yeah. And I thought they could have made more of the fact that Danny kind of ends up doing exactly what Kevin did, and like she's picking Spike over his daughter because, like we talked about before, Spike doesn't play with girls.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and so then, of course, that drives her to go into her whole I need to feel pretty phase and pretending that the lipstick she had on was actually a cherry Tootsie Pop. And But then we get that, like, I really enjoyed the heartfelt scene, though, where she is at the diner.
Yeah, with Kevin.
And Uncle Kevin comes in and where he tells her to, like, chin up because, you know, like, but because deep down, he's still a good guy.
Yeah.
He's still a good uncle.
Yeah, he's still a good uncle. I like that scene when he tells her, like, she asks him if she's pretty and he tells her she's beautiful. Like, I thought.
Yeah.
That's kind of the, like, the pro woman take that I wanted to see a little bit more from Devon Sawa. Yeah. But I guess he is just a simple boy. It could have been worse. You could have at the end just whispered in her ear, "Can I keep you?" We could have all cringed.
Oh boy! But then, of course, you know when Icebox leaves the team falls apart, and then Spike gets taken away because the ruse is up there, and then thankfully, oh my God! Like just when you think. You're down in the dumps, they're kicking you when you're down, well shit, John Madden shows up for some reason because I don't know, football, so
because their bus is lost
in Urbania. I mean, I know that John Madden is famous for hating to fly, and so he does bus everywhere, but
I think you have to say a rest in peace for John Madden. I'm pretty sure he died recently.
Oh, did he? I did not know that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty fair. I want to say it's like, let's see.
I mean, the other people that were playing, or that were there, were Steve Emptman, Bruce Smith, Emmett Smith, and Tim Brown. Honestly, I only know Emmett Smith, but I'm not a follower of the...
Yeah, Emmett Smith as well.
Yeah, I know John Madden, of course, because of the video game more than almost anything else, but I'm not an NFL guy.
Yeah, John Madden died December 28th,
2021. Oh, shit. Well, I think that was
the same. I think that was the same day as Betty White.
Oh. Well, see, you can't die on the same day as Betty White.
Betty White died December 31st. There we go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember them being around the same time. And clearly Betty White eclipsed anything that was happening in that week.
Yeah. I will say, though, that I actually didn't hate these athletes. These were some of the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we talked about it in Space Jam, too. There's a couple that do a really good job, and these were a couple of good ones. I like the one guy that's, you know, the 80% mental, 40% physical. And then I realized, like, shit, I didn't catch that either. Because, like, you get the one kid that, like, does the mental math in his head. And then, like, I'm like, oh, my God, like, I didn't catch that either. But that was, like, just such a hilarious, subtle thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's what they're teaching them how to do is, like, growl and intimidate. And just a weird shoehorned in scene overall, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's literally like we have a football movie. The NFL probably paid some sort of promotional thing, and they're just like, oh, we need a spot to shoehorn this in, so
yeah,
what better spot than right before the big game?
That's right. Yeah, but after that we get a getting psyched up montage though first, because you know it's a 90s kids sports movie, and you know you need multiple montages. And they're doing their intimidating faces in the mirror, and the one kid is essentially doing blackface with the grease paint. But the one thing I don't understand about that is at the end of that little montage, there's a point where there's a cop driving down the street and over the loudspeaker yes. of his vehicle saying goodnight, Urbania, and a special good luck to the people that have the big game tomorrow. It's like, well, fuck, we're trying to get our sleep for this game.
Yeah, it's just that small town America for you, where the cops just drive through neighborhoods to tuck everybody in at night.
Yeah. I mean, you were raised in a small town. Did you ever see this kind of behavior from the Canadian cops in a small town?
No, I did not.
So, ultimately, we get to the big game. I mean, it's all been climaxing towards this, you know, this big juicy wetness of fun, the mania in Urbania. I enjoyed having Harry Shearer as the announcer. I mean, Harry Shearer, on top of everything he does for The Simpsons, he should be an announcer.
Yeah.
He's got the perfect announcer voice.
Yeah, he was good.
I wish I had a Harry Shearer voice.
Well, you have a voice for podcasting. It's kind of like announcing.
There we go. There we go. Sure. Once we get to that, they have their chant in the locker room to get the other team intimidated, because apparently they learned everything they needed to know from those very famous football players that I don't know who they are. But and we get our underwhelming, jersey presentation for the kids. And then they come running out to the field. And as soon as I saw that banner across their opening, I automatically in my notes is I foresee that banner not ripping.
Yeah.
And sure enough, yeah, it doesn't rip, but I still laugh. I knew it was coming, but I still laughed.
I thought, like, so when they're in the locker room, like, trying to intimidate the other team, Icebox comes in dressed in her cheerleader uniform. And, like, that's the first time they realize, like, she's not going to be on the field with them, right?
It seems that
because
way.
Because I feel like it seems like that's what kind of deflates them afterwards.
Yeah. And and so the thing I don't understand about the cheerleaders, though, like, she would be cheering for the other team, wouldn't she? Or are the cheerleaders just generic cheerleaders for both teams in this stadium? Because, like, you never see her alone on the sidelines being like, go Giants! Like, she's...
Yeah. I feel like, because Kevin is the one who organizes getting the cheerleaders, so I kind of felt like they were for the Cowboys. But yeah. I guess this is also kind of a spectacle, so maybe they're just, like, generic entertainment.
Yeah. I enjoyed that during the bit during the coin flip, where the mics are live to the entire stadium, so everyone's listening to their bed and everything like that. And then I audibly laughed. Like, I laughed hard. You know, like, a lot of the times I say I laughed at that, and it's usually just me being like, or, ah, that's funny. But this one, it's like, this one killed me, is the kickoff when the kid gets kicked in the nuts. Like, I should have seen it coming. I should have seen it coming, but my God, like, it floored me.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I found the part where one of the other kids tells the giant linebacker, I think, the big guy, that he's gonna hit him so hard that he farts out of his mouth and talks out of his ass, and then they actually, like, did it. And they're like, the other kid is like, I guess it is anatomically possible or whatever. I didn't expect to think that was as funny as I did.
Yeah. And I mean, even stupid things like the kid getting flattened into the grass in the end zone and stuff like that. The whole firm grip glue. What is that? Is it like, is it rubber cement? Like, is it?
Like, I don't know. It looked like tar.
Right. So, are the kids shrinking down inside his jersey?
Yeah.
As the guy's coming to knock his head off. I'll knock your head off. And he shrinks down into his jersey. Gave me Master of Disguise vibes, if you've ever seen that movie with Dana Carvey. Turtle? No? Okay.
No, I haven't seen it.
I also like how, like, all the plays are written on the one kid's belly. Yeah. Now, in the whole, like, grand scheme of, like, any of these sports kids movies, how do you think that their unique plays lived up in comparison to any that you've seen in other movies.
Well, I mean, it's no Flying V.
Yeah.
It's no Knuckle Puck. It's almost, to me, it's akin to, I think it's in D2, when, the one where, I think it's Ken Wu, I can't remember if it's D1 or D2, because they both have figure skaters, but they have the one figure skater go start spinning at the front of the net, and then it's like, I think Fulton is going to take a big slap shot, and then everybody gets out of the way, and then he just soft passes it to the figure skater who slides it in. I would say that play, the play that they use to kind of win the game in Little Giants is similar to that, where, because I mean they like fake a bunch of ball handoffs and then move it into like a rugby style passing situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about American football. I mean, as we've established, I'm the manliest man that's ever manned. But is that amount of extra passing legal in American football? Because it really was like a rugby play, like you said. Yeah. Like, I know they were all lateral movements, but I thought all movement of the ball, for one, had to happen behind the line of scrimmage.
I mean, I've seen a few like plays like that on YouTube of like high school or high school football in the States. And I think as long as it's lateral, you can pass as much as you want. It just doesn't usually work out because it's not like rugby where you have to like grab tackle. You could just get shoulder blocked. So
yeah.
But yeah, as far as I'm aware, you could just keep throwing lateral passes as long as they're all going behind. It's only the quarterback can throw forwards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, we get to halftime and the pep talk is not the usual sports movie pep talk. Like, it's very, hey, I was picked on as a kid, and even if they beat you 99 times out of 100, that still leaves one time. Yeah, one time! And then they go out there and they get 1 yard, and like the fucking stadium goes nuts.
Yeah, I kind of like that pep talk. I found it really inspiring, even though it's like, yeah, it's just that idea, like, you know.
It seems like the anti-sports talk.
Get knocked down 99 times, get up 100 type thing.
Yeah. For a second there, I thought you were going to go into some Chumbawamba lyrics for us.
I got knocked down. Yeah. They should have. I don't know if Chumbawamba was around during this movie, but they could have used that for sure.
Yeah.
I was really hoping on that last play, though, that they were going to deceive the Cowboys long enough that the fat kid was actually going to make it to the end zone.
Yeah. 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 I was kind of hoping he was going to get it.
Just to win one for the big guys.
Yeah. Well, see, and I mean, of course, like, you know, Spike makes a dirty play. You know, we mentioned it a little bit earlier where, like, Kevin was like, whoa, 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 you pull that shit again, you're out of here. But that gets Icebox back in the game.
Yeah.
Skirt and all.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think playing in a skirt is a good idea at all. I understand that we're trying to make some statement about feminism or something here, but like, that just doesn't seem safe. You're not wearing any pads at that point.
Yeah, you might skin your knee and other things.
Yeah. And I like the callback to the kid getting kicked in the nuts joke.
with the extra padding.
When they go to kick their first convert, yeah, and he's like crying, please, please. Yeah, and he's got all the extra jock strap on and stuff, yeah.
Kind of the only thing I wish they would have done better with Icebox's return is, I wish he would have just flattened Spike.
Yeah,
I get that the like shoulder backdrop thing could look. I don't think it actually looks cool in the movie. It looks clearly it's too loose. But I wish he would have just flattened him and like moved him back, like that. She would have actually got a solid hit on him.
Yeah,
and just shown that, you know, like girls can hit too.
Yeah. I do like the, what's the last thing they'd expect? A reverse to me from the like little kid?
Yeah.
I'm going to die.
Well, yeah, you have that scene too, I think, He's the one who gets the ball and just starts running in circles around the ref, being like, blow the whistle! Blow the whistle!
Yeah, and then, we get our second goal from Johnny because Johnny's dad shows up, and our third goal from Heyman because he pictures the toilet paper, and we've got a tie game, and thankfully Patty comes out of the stands and knows what play he's going to do.
I didn't get that. Like, why would she come down? I when I first watched it, I thought that was Kevin's wife. Because you know how she's clearly cheering for the Giants and he keeps looking back at her?
Yeah, I just thought,
like, it would have been way more meaningful if she had come down and been like, hey, Danny, like, do you remember this play? Not this woman who's just kind of, like, shows up every now and then. Like, why, like, I don't know. I don't fully think I comprehend what her relationship is to
well,
this.
Well, see, it's Oshie because family. she saw how Kevin treated Danny as a kid, and I think she's always been partial to Danny. I think the plane with her necklace is the I've got a crush on you, but I can't say anything because I'm shy just like you are.
Yeah.
Tick, maybe. And so I feel like she watched Danny have to sit on the sidelines as a kid, but because she was there to watch the game, she remembers what Kevin did, and it's his go-to move.
Yeah.
It's like Harry Potter always going to Expelliarmus. You know, it's he's got a signature move, and that's why Danny knew what the play was.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. But then the kid comes up with the annexation of Puerto Rico is the play that he comes up with. And like I said, that's all the reverse laterals and all that sort of thing. And the little Giants win.
I got to say, I was not expecting them to win.
Yeah,
I really thought this movie was going to end in a tie.
Oh, see, that would have almost been better. Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know if the Little Giants deserved to win. Like, yeah. With all their unorthodox plays of, let's get the fat kid to fart in their faces to scatter them.
I would say two things. Like, I think that, yeah, I agree. I don't think they deserve to win. But I also think they don't have to win to earn the respect.
Yeah, that's like a tie would have been nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for Danny's purpose, like, a tie would have been as good of a win in terms of, like, proving himself to his brother.
Yeah, because we get to the end of the movie, and, like, the only demand that Danny actually has is that he wants his name painted on the water tower. You know, he doesn't actually want the car dealership. That seems like a better business than the one you have there, Danny boy.
Yeah.
You know? and he gets up the nerve to ask out Patty Floyd. You know, they're gonna go for dinner. You know, and so, like, there we go.
And Icebox and Junior just have that weird holding hands, jumping around thing. Like, yeah their relationship is baffling.
Yeah, it really is. But it's a happy ending. You know, there we go. The end. Mm-hmm. But I am disappointed that the old men never really made an... I don't remember seeing them at the game. And they should have been front row for that, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, there should have... Or there at least should have been a scene at the end of, like, an exchange of money. Like, who won, who lost on all the betting and stuff. Yeah.
But, I mean, like you said, with if it had ended in a tie, it's like, then I guess we wouldn't have gotten this final moment of, you know, Danny, you're not really going to take my business, are you? Danny, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I see, now that you've said it out loud, I wish it had ended in a tie. That would have been a good ending to this movie.
If I had my way.
But there we go, that's Little Giants. Now, Colin... On IMDb, it scored 6.4 out of 10 and has a Metacritic score of none listed. This is a second time that I've encountered this, Little Monsters being the other time. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 36% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 63%. I like how those are palindromes there. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a shot to the football helmeted head of a child. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Umesh Chandra Sharma gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, "This film is surprisingly good. Movie lovers should watch it at least once. Ignore what critics say about the movie. Critics will find something to criticize in great movies like Citizen Kane and Casablanca 2. A good movie is one that you can watch with your family, including children, and you all enjoy watching together. So Little Giants fits well in this definition."
Okay, yeah.
Christine Long gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "I was a tomboy growing up, still kind of am, and Football Sunday was a staple in my home. Seeing a girl play football with the boys is absolutely awesome. This is a really cute movie for the whole family to enjoy. Critics suck. Don't let them deter you." And then the last one I have is from Russell Rogers. 4 out of 5 stars. "Fun family movie about Pee-wee football with a message about inclusivity. My only problem with this movie is how much they played up a crush that Rick Moranis' daughter has for a boy. Then at the end of the movie, Rick Moranis' character is setting up a date with his daughter's crush's mother? Okay. I'm sure his daughter isn't going to be pleased with that news later."
All of a sudden, my mind goes to, like, the darkest places of all the step-sibling porn that I've seen on Pornhub. I mean, it's...
Oh, boy.
But with Devon Sawa. So, yeah, so 6.4 and 63 from audiences and 36 from critics. You know, with this movie, I mean, I'd never seen it before, but I thoroughly enjoyed my viewing of this movie. I found this movie to be a lot of fun. And I think one of the things that appealed most to me about this particular film is the fact that other movies like The Mighty Ducks or any of these, you've got a coach that is trying to become respected by the plain villain, whereas this is a relationship between two brothers that is happening in the same world as this kid's sports movie, this underdog story. And I think that's one of the things that really sets this apart, is that relationship that you have between the two coaches that is better than most other movies that I can think of. Or, you know, that I have to say that even a movie like Bad News Bears or, you know, things like that, it's been a long enough time since I've seen those that I don't remember what the antagonist was like. But to me, this feels unique with this movie, is this relationship between the two coaches that is so much stronger than any other relationship. And that's what I like about it, is it's not the downtrodden coach that has to do this because it's community service or some shit. It's the coach that, you know, no, I was like you and I want to, and so I want to make a team. And so it just, I felt that gave it a very positive, uplifting feeling throughout the movie, that it made me happy. I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you said. I think that I would say that while the movie is very, very basic and formulaic and, you know, kind of predictable,
predictable.
That doesn't really take away anything about how enjoyable it is.
Yeah.
And I really like the the moral of the story as it is, like, just go and put it all out for, like, the chance of that one time. You know, I like that. And again, I'll reiterate, I just think in that final game, watching all those parents, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I'm a parent now. I don't know. But I was just like, it was so heartwarming to see all these kids get their moment and then also see, you know, like, that you see that in Mighty Ducks, I guess, but and other movies, but you don't see how proud the parents are in a lot of those movies, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
There was just something about that really struck me.
Yeah. And I mean, I was very just, I don't know, mesmerized by Ed O'Neill.
Oh yeah.
Like if I had to give an MVP in this movie, like it's Ed O'Neill, because I just, you know, maybe it's just because I'm so familiar with him as a curmudgeonly old man, but I thought that he gave a fantastic performance, and you know,
Yeah.
That was also something that just at the core of this movie really helped it.
Yeah, like I am only familiar with Ed O'Neill from Modern Family and Married with Children. And I would think that those characters are actually not that far removed from each other. Like, like I think that, you know, it's just, and you're please playing stuff for laughs. But I thought after watching Little Giants, I'm almost like want to say like I want to watch more Ed O'Neill movies because I was surprised watching this movie at how good of an actor he actually is. Mm-hmm. Like how even in like the smallest scenes, how he can make something so simple, so sincere, and
yeah,
and just like play that antagonist but still a good guy it was really fascinating to watch him watch his performance in this movie.
And it definitely does show like how much acting he was doing as Al Bundy.
Yeah,
where that is a character like it's amazing when you realize how hard it is to put on even a character that's as dumb and clueless as Al Bundy.
Yeah.
Right. You don't think he's putting in a lot of work, but there's a lot of work there. I mean, it's, you know, like the subtlety of Michael Scott on The Office, characters like that, where it's just like, you know, how did they not get way more recognition for the character that they were playing on TV? You know, yeah. Like back in the day, how was Al Bundy not an Emmy Award winner? Unless he was, maybe he was, but I don't think he ever actually won an award until he played Jay Pritchett.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard it said that you actually have to be smarter to play stupid.
Yeah.
Because playing somebody stupid requires a lot more, like you need to really be an observer of like idiocy and to how to could basically like perform that without it being a caricature.
Yeah. So I mean, all I can say about this movie is it's formulaic, but if you like these kind of underdog stories, it's a great one. It's up there. It's worth a watch.
Kids would love it. Yeah. As well, like I think it's a good, like that one reviewer I read, it's an excellent family movie for sure. It's an excellent family movie night movie.
Yeah. They just need to go in and get someone to rework the CGI on the snot.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Little Giants, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, if you like that show, just tell your friends. Share our posts. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to build an audience, or go on to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on and give us 5 stars and a review. You know, it just takes a couple minutes out of your day, but boy, the things it would do for us, you have no idea. It would help drive us up the charts. It'll help us get more people listening to the show. Or if you want to go above and beyond and become an executive producer, help us financially and get a shout out on the show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon family.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our social media. Go on there, give us some likes, comments, subscriptions. And if you would like to, you can also email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Just like Rebecca H. did. She didn't email us, but she slid into our DMs. Same thing. If you want us talking about them, let us know. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.